Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Vernomatic Productions.
Good evening, everybody. As always, new content drops on a weekly basis. Tonight's episode, Metal Waltz, bringing you another edition of our side project show called Rock and Roll Detention. Tonight, we're celebrating Women's History Month as Metal Waltz has both Vixen vocalist Lorraine Lewis and Merciful Fate bassist Becky Baldwin onto the show. They're going to talk about the evolution of women in rock and heavy metal. It's a good one because it's coming from two different angles. Lorraine, you know, back in the 80s, she was in the band Femme Fatale. About 5 years ago, she took over lead vocal duties for Vixen. So she gives us the insight what it was like, the emergence of women in hard rock and metal back in the 70s and the 80s. She talks about her musical path, how she was a big David Lee Roth fan, claims Van Halen was the game changer by seeing him back in the day, and even admitted that she wanted to make little DLRs. Just going to have to listen to find out about that. She talks about the 80s Headbangers Ball era, Lita, Vixen, Femme Fatale, sex, drugs, and fake titties. She also talks about the bands back in the day, Girl School, Doro, Lee Aaron, the Canadian metal girl. So she gives you the insight from back in the day, but then we get current with Becky Baldwin. Now, if you're not familiar with Becky, she comes from the UK hard rock band Fury, and she secured the bass playing gig with Merciful Fate. She did the tour a couple years ago when Fate did about 10, 12 shows around America, but just very recently she, again, gained the permanent job as bass player. So she talks about that. She talks about her experience of the explosion of women in metal in the 90s, you know, Lacuna Coil, Arch Enemy, Kitty, all that kind of stuff. And then she even touches on the shredders of today. Nita Strauss, Orianti, Courtney Cox of the Iron Maidens, and a couple other female guitarists. It's a real, really cool, cool episode. You're going to dig it. If you're new to the show or missed recent episodes, last week we had James Durbin, the American Idol contestant, that parlayed that appearance into a brand new second solo CD. 2 weeks ago, Judas Priest's Invincible Shield review from us and here at Metal Mayhem. And at the beginning of the month, we had Roy Z, the producer from the brand new Bruce Dickinson. So that's all up on the website. And speaking of the website, MetalMayhemROC.com, totally revamped, totally killer. Our artistic crew, Christina Meyer and her staff, put together a great new website. Get up there, sign up for the newsletter, and join our community. Okay, that's all we got. So I'm going to hand it over to Metal Walt for this week's edition of Rock and Roll Detention. I'm the Vernomatic, and this is Metal Mayhem ROC.
Hey, hey, this is Lorraine Lewis from Vixen, and you're listening to Metal Mayhem ROC with Metal Walt and John, the Vernomatic Verno. Woo! Yeah. Have a great day.
Ah, look, you're back in detention.
Got it.
But this time, you won't be throwing pencils up into the ceiling tiles the entire time.
Don't mess with the bull, young man. You'll get the horn.
Your proctors expect you to be on your worst behavior as they give you remedial instruction in the history of hard rock and metal.
You're going to school?
Hey, settle down. Here's Metal Walt with your rock and roll detention.
Good evening, everyone. It's the middle of March. We've moved those clocks forwards and our stomachs are filled with corned beef and cabbage. On this episode of Rock and Roll Detention, we're observing Women's History Month by celebrating those female trendsetters of hard rock and heavy metal. So joining me today are my special guest co-hosts from the United Kingdom, Becky Ironfingers Baldwin of the bands Fury and Merciful Fate, and from sunny Southern California, Lorraine Lewis of Vixen. Ladies, welcome to Metal Mayhem ROC.
Hey. Hello. Great to be here. Hey, Becky.
Great to meet you both.
So this is great because, you know, I look at this as we have two awesome female musicians here that come from maybe different generations. You know, Lorraine, you're kind of the veteran vocalist. You've been around for many decades, you know, carrying the torch of Vixen forward, putting out new music. You released a song Red last year. Great stuff. And then Becky, you're kind of like, you're not a newbie, but you're a rising star. And you're one that's was put on the map a couple years ago when you were, you know, kind of brought into the camp of Merciful Fate. But you also play with your own band, Fury. So I think we're going to really see a couple generations of women in music today. We'll really, you know, have a lot of fun with this. So for you guys and our listeners, we have a show, a segment of our show called Rock and Roll Detention, where we take a deep dive into a particular band or genre of music. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to examine the female leaders of rock and metal, both past and present. So let's have a go at it. So first thing I want to say, though, Becky, I'm going to put you on the spotlight first because I noticed on your Instagram, you are showcasing these really, really cool T-shirts that say, it's got your picture on it, but it says, diversity is strength, discrimination is weakness, bassist against racists. I think that's fucking awesome. So talk a little bit about that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so there's this kind of like charity and the organization called Bassists Against Racists. And it was set up by this bass player who's based out in the States. And I think it all happened around like, you know, 2020, the lockdowns and, you know, the kind of, you know, the injustice that was going on with like the handling of police against like black people who were protesting and or were just going about their lives. And so, you know, there was a push for trying to raise more funds for people, legal fees for people who were like having problems in that kind of situation. And yeah, so I mean, I've been following this page for that page for a while. Like they were going through lots of different bass players and they'd released a T-shirt. People would pre-order the T-shirt, they make them. And everyone there is kind of just donating their time, like the artist who drew the T-shirt. And I think they just cover costs for the printing of the actual shirt. And then after that, all the profits go to any kind of charity. So actually the one that each artist can choose who they want to donate to, as long as it's part of that kind of theme, like anti-racism, that kind of thing. So I chose Doctors Without Borders. So they're supporting people all over the world who are having trouble with, like, you know, mostly war. So I think at the moment they're in the Middle East, they're in Ukraine, and yeah, they're supporting anyone who needs the kind of support and humanitarian aid that is anywhere in the world.
Great. That's great. And this is, listen, that's something that could apply to anything. It doesn't necessarily need to be racism, but could be anything that's, you know, considered prejudiced against color, skin, sexuality, whatever it might be, right? So
yeah, I wanted the kind of the front of it, I wanted to have some kind of little quote on it that, I don't know, I guess as like a white person, I wanted to show that, okay, yeah, it's racism is the main thing that we're talking about here, but the there's parallels with sexism, transphobia, any kind of prejudice is like something that like it's worth talking about, is worth caring about. So, you know, I want to speak on racism, but, you know, as a person, as a white person, I can't really give the best representation of that. So, yeah, so it was kind of like just pushing the kind of being diverse in music and in every aspect of like the world, then it definitely strengthens us as people and as a society. So yeah, that was kind of what I was going for with that. And I mean, unfortunately, that my one's finished, like the kind of month that you can pre-order that, but the company's still going. And if you follow Bassists Against Racists, then you can see what new one, which new T-shirt, which new bass player is being featured on their website now.
That's great. That's awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that, Becky. Lorraine, I just wanted to ask you a question, maybe just going back to your present. Just how long has it been now since you've been with Vixen? And you know, before we get into the history of women in rock and metal, what's going on in the world of Vixen these days? You release some new material. Like, what's in store for 2024?
We just got some, thank you so much. We just got some dates dropped today, as a matter of fact. I was counting the years. This is my sixth year of being the vocalist for Vixen. So it's gone by really, really fast. I can't believe that we're here already, but life is good. Things are good. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of tour dates that are coming up. We released the single 4 months ago. I'd love to say that there's a follow-up single. However, I can't really do that at the moment. We have a lot of ideas cooking. And so I know that we'll get to it when we get to it. You know, it's a little challenging being not all in the same place at the same time, but lots of dates are dropping for the band. We're going to be really busy this spring and summer. So I'm excited about that. And then I wanted to touch on something that Becky brought up about racism. And she was saying, you know, she can't really speak for minorities, maybe because she's a white woman. But at the same time, you know, everyone, in my opinion, is somewhat of a minority, right? Like, I mean, women in rock, that's a minority. I've lived women in rock since the 80s, and I definitely have been a minority in that arena. If I would go into a radio station on a promotional tour and I saw Vixen, a big poster of Vixen or Lita Ford, I knew that I was not going to get that radio station because they would play one female on rock radio back in the day. So that's just the way that it has always been. And I know that things are changing now on that. And I'm not really one to wave my flag, you know, men suck and women rule. That's not it. It's that I like community and I like everybody lifting each other up as a community of rock and roll. And so that's really where I'm coming from. But if I would walk in and I would see Guns N' Roses or Kip Winger, I could get that radio station. And it's kind of ridiculous to think about, but that's really how it was. But I've lived through that and everything is great. And now touring, summer tours, you know, I'm going to be on the road with Ace Frehley and Great White and Slaughter and all of these bands, Quiet Riot. They're really our brothers in rock, and it's so great to be able to share the stage with all of those rock and roll bad boys that, you know, I knew on the Sunset Strip days. So it's very cool to be in 2024 getting ready to hit the road again with all of these amazing musicians, whether they are male or female. I love the rock and roll community. We really are one big rock and roll family.
And we're going to get through some of that history, but you're so right, Lorraine. I mean, I'm 53 years old. I kind of lived through the MTV years, watching you with Femme Fatale, watching the Vixen ladies grow up on Headbangers Ball. But, you know, you think about Becky, you're probably considerably younger than maybe myself. But you know what? Women in metal have come a long, long, long way. And you look at the market now, I'm not going to lie, there's so many freaking great bands, whether they're all female bands, female fronted bands, shredders, they're all over the place. And kick-ass music is kick-ass music no matter which way you slice it. So as a male, I look at it as I don't care who's playing it. As long as I like it and it's good, I'm in.
Agree, 100%. And, you know, I love that you're a bass player, Becky. I love bass players in general. And I love when women especially wear their bass really low. But I don't know if you've heard of a rockin' band from Italy called Måneskin. Victoria is the bass player, female bass player. They are rad. They are fucking amazing. And yeah, guys and girls in that band, but really great music. So yeah, rock and roll.
Yeah, I know them. The bass player plays a Dan Electro Longhorn, like what I've got here. I remember seeing them. They did the Eurovision Song Contest a few years ago. And I was like, I've got one of those basses. but yeah, they're really cool. And I think it's great that there's more mixed band. It's quite normal to have bands that's both women and men. Whereas I think, you know, perhaps like in the 70s and 80s, like if you were either a woman fronting a male backing band or an all-female band, it would be hard to kind of step in. I feel like there's bands like Heart are kind of the exception to the rule in terms of like bands that are mixed. And, you know, it was kind of either a billing of, I don't know, don't get me wrong, I've been in loads of all female bands and it's like fantastic, and I love that that dynamic. But it felt like, it seemed like it was kind of pushed towards like, yes, okay, you should be a female band, or like it would be weird if men joined women on stage unless if she's just like, if she's the singer. So I think it's great that it's becoming a lot more mixed, and like a lot more mixed in terms of genre as well, going a lot more broad in different styles of metal.
Like, talk about your upbringing, like the kind of music that was played in your house. Let's say, what were you raised on, your parents or your grandparents? And the second part of the question is, how did you decide to get into metal and play the bass or whatever you did? Like, talk about you, like your introduction into becoming a musician.
So I grew up in the 90s, and my parents, I listened to a lot of my parents' music, and I listened to some pop, and like I kind of liked the Spice Girls and stuff, but my parents, they really liked ABBA, and I got obsessed with ABBA, and I was obsessed with Michael Jackson. That was another big influence. But I think that, you know, that was on the edge of kind of like rock music, you know, a lot of Michael Jackson's releases. You know, he often had like, he had Jennifer Batten, like female guitarist. And I fell in love with Thriller, like the music video, because I got really into like horror movies, and I just love the whole idea of like this crossover of like pop rock and horror and zombies and stuff. So that was kind of when I was a child. And then as I kind of approached my teens, there was like, you know, the whole explosion of like the internet was being possible in people's homes. Music TV was like in most people's houses. And it was, I guess, like the first bands that I saw were Linkin Park, Tenacious D, that kind of era, Evanescence, and Metallica were the ones that I really kind of honed in on. But yeah, like my impression of like women in metal and rock were like Amy Lee, Tarha from Nightwish. And so I was like, I have to have black hair, otherwise I'm not like a woman in metal. I hadn't seen like a blonde woman playing metal before, and I was blonde at the time, like a naturally blonde, and so I had to start dyeing my hair. But like, I don't know, now I realize, like, you know, a couple of years later I discovered Angela Gossow of Arch Enemy, and I was like, oh, actually I could have blonde hair, like she looks pretty cool with that. But I don't know, it's kind of part of me now, and I don't want to change it.
How did you pick up the bass? And who are your bass inspirations? Because I do notice you play the Rickenbacker. Of course, one of my favorite bands of all time is our Canadian friends, Rush, and Geddy Lee plays the Rickenbacker, and so does Lemmy, of course, and probably many others.
Yeah. Yeah, so actually, so my dad is a big Hawkwind fan, so the kind of pathway from Hawkwind to Motorhead was very natural, and then back to Hawkwind, because I was like, actually the bass lines in Hawkwind are more my kind of style, I think, because he was part of a bigger ensemble, more musicians. He wasn't like fronting it and playing chords, and it's more open, more space rock. There's a lot more interesting like bass lines throughout those songs that Lemmy did with Hawkwind. But yeah, my big inspirations were Cliff Burton of Metallica. So, you know, he played a Rickenbacker as well, mm-hmm. Sometimes, and Geezer Butler of Black Sabbath. But I don't know, really, like, it was just always the bass that I really wanted. And whenever I'd watch these old episodes of, like, Top of the Pops and things in Old Grey Whistle Test, the bands of, like, the 70s and 80s across, like, funk, punk, rock, metal, everything, there'd always be Rickenbackers there, and I was just like, that's just the coolest looking bass in the world, like I really must have one. So I don't know, it's more that I love the old school stuff, and so yeah, Rickenbacker really suits me well for the kind of music that I enjoy.
It's awesome. So Lorraine, same questions to you. Let's talk a little bit about your musical upbringing in the house, and how did you get into music, and you know, before the days of Femme Fatale, like what was your pre-life to Femme Fatale in the mid-late 80s, let's say?
Yeah, what was going on in my world? Well, I come from a family of six kids. My father used to sing in church. His mother, my grandmother, used to sing on the radio. So she was a flamenco dancer from Spain, and she had a radio program, and she used to sing. So it was, music was always in our house. I don't know, I'm a lot older than you are. I'm actually 65. But I, growing up, I don't know if you remember, Sunday newspaper, there would be this RCA, you can buy like 10 albums for a penny. So my father one day asked all of us kids to choose an album. And so we did. And the first album that I got was Up, Up and Away by the Fifth Dimension, which is interesting that we're talking about diversity and everything and women and men. And, you know, Fifth Dimension was a Black singing group with the hit song Up, Up and Away.
Remember that.
In my beautiful balloon.
I remember that well. Yep.
Yes. And so I just gravitated to it. I love the artwork. I love their outfits. I love their hairstyles. I just thought that they were so cool. So that's the first album that I got. And then my dad would very often, he listened to Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass, and he loved them. And he would often have a record on, and he would come and talk to me and my brothers and sisters, and gosh, do you hear that? Do you hear that little sound? You know, do you hear that bell? Do you hear that tambourine? Do you hear that drum beat? And he would, little nuances of the music, he would point out to us as children and growing up. And all of those things really stuck with me. And I just gravitated to music. And then growing up in New Mexico, I was in girls' choir. I was in concert choir. I did all that stuff in high school. I had my first solo in junior high. It was a duet with another girl. And I remember my mom telling me that I drowned her out and everybody could just hear me. And it was like, that was my calling, I felt. I needed to be a singer. And then I was really listening at that time to Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Linda Ronstadt, you know, New Mexico, Albuquerque. You know, I wore cowboy boots. I mean, it's a little Southern, you know, Nuevo Mexico flavored. And so I listened to Southern rock. I listened to Lynyrd Skynyrd, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Like I said, Linda Ronstadt. I was in a cover band doing Linda Ronstadt covers. And that's really where I cut my teeth, being on stage and getting comfortable. I was underage and I was in my first top 40 band called West Wind. So my path, it was interesting. I mean, you think about Up, Up and Away in the Fifth Dimension, going into Lynyrd Skynyrd and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And then everything changed drastically when Van Halen came out. And that just changed everything about me. I mean, in West Wind, I was wearing all black with a cowboy hat. And then I was just writing about this today on my Instagram. It was September 10th, 1980. I had been out of high school for 4 years. I went and saw Van Halen on their Women and Children First tour. It was the first time they had come to Albuquerque. And I stood on my chair the whole effing night watching David Lee Roth do his thing, crotch first. You know, he comes out crotch first when he walks out on stage. I mean, he is such a showman. And I was so enthralled, in love, passionate, like mind blown watching Van Halen perform, and especially David Lee Roth. And that is where I made up my mind. It is rock and roll forever, to the core. I did not want to date David Lee Roth. I wanted to be David Lee Roth. And that is how it all happened. And that is, I mean, I made up my mind. It's like, here we go, rock and roll. Big hair, like the whole thing. Everything changed for me then. And I was in a band called Babe Ruthless now at that point. And then Babe Ruthless eventually became Femme Fatale. And, you know, being on stage, there's nothing like it. I love singing. I love the music. It's all about the music. However, I am also a performer. I love being in your face. I love taking chances on stage. I love crowd surfing. I love being belly to belly with the people. I am a performer. I come from the school of of David Lee Roth and Tina Turner and people like that. So when you come to a Vixen show, that's what you get. You get the Vixen hit songs. You get amazing band, Rocky Petrucci on drums, who was the original drummer, killer monster drummer. Julia Lage on bass, amazing bass player. And Britt Lightning, Lightning Fingers on guitar. And then me, I'm the ringleader. I'm flipping David Lee Roth incarnated, but Lorraine Lewis style. And we are there to entertain and have a great fucking time. And that's what we do.
Lorraine, I have to ask you, though, through all of your years of performing way back in the 80s, did you ever cross paths with Dave and Eddie, or either, you know, touring with them or at a festival or down at the Rainbow or wherever?
I did David Lee Roth, Universal Amphitheater backstage. You know, I did sort of think when we met, I really thought, you know, there is a chance that he could fall in love with me and then we'll have little David Lee Roth babies. But that didn't happen. It was always very non-eventful. I never have met the other guys in the band, which is pretty surprising in a way. But I'm a huge fan to this day. And Sammy, you know, Sammy's voice is amazing too. So, but yeah, I'm from the school of David Lee Roth all the way.
Metal Mayhem ROC.
Metal. I'm Metalhead.
Metal Mayhem ROC is the home for metal from the very beginnings.
This is James the Bear from Hellstar. You're listening to Burn-O-Matic.
Dave Overkill from the Cleveland band Destructor. Hey, Dave, how are you?
I'm doing great.
To longtime headliners.
Hey, this is Red Beach from Whitesnake.
Hey, this is Vinny Appice from Dio, Black Sabbath, and Last in Line.
To music of today.
Hi, this is Olaf Wikstrand from Enforcer.
Hi, this is Braun from Mastodon.
You're listening to Metal Mayhem ROC.
With John the Vernomatic Burner.
Plus, we talk with producers and authors to give you behind-the-scenes info.
Hi, this is William Irwin, author of The Meaning of Metallica, Ride the Lyrics.
Greg Renoff, the author of the book Van Halen Rising, and the Ted Templeman book, A Platinum Producer's Life in Music.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Metal Mayhem ROC, a proud member of the Pantheon podcast team. Giving you more to listen for. Join our community. And always remember to keep it heavy.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shouted Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors.
No prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/Pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/Pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
So a little about me, again, like I said, I'm a kid of the late 70s, early 80s, but maybe one thing I remember is I had my late sister and I had a first cousin, Ramona, giving her a little shout out now. And they were 10 years older than me or so. And we lived in the same house in New Jersey and they lived upstairs and we were downstairs. But I always remember them. They were in the vinyl stage, the late 70s, early 80s. And I always remember Heart playing on their turntable. But the biggest one that I remember back then was Pat Benatar, because Pat Benatar, number one, she was a kick-ass singer, but still to this day, her husband, Neil Giraldo, I mean, what a guitar player. One of my favorite guitar solos of all time is Promises in the Dark. It's just arena rock across the board. But for me, hearing Pat Benatar, that was new. It was MTV was coming out at that point in time, and you got to see the Wilson sisters with Heart. Then Joan Jett came out, and these were now radio-friendly songs, but they were not light. They weren't pop videos. This was not, you know, Utopia and other things that were on MTV at the time. This was kick-ass rock stuff. So if you really think about, like, the origins of female in rock and roll, I mean, yeah, you could go back earlier than that, but you probably go back to that period, maybe the Runaways when, you know, Joan Jett, Lita Ford, Sherry Curry, they kind of hit the ground running in those late 70s. And then, of course, Becky, from your neck of the woods, you had Girl School, right? Still going active all these years later. Kim McAuliffe. So any impressions on those bands?
For me? Absolutely. Yeah. So I saw Joan Jett, I saw supporting Motorhead and Alice Cooper. And that, and I was, yeah, very young at the time. I think I might have been 16 or 17. I was just like, this woman is just so cool. And I think, you know, from there, I got more and more into Joan Jett and then the Runaways. And I don't know, I really just love that. I don't know, I guess that also that crossover between punk and hard rock that the Runaways had that kind of then led into more of like the kind of Riot Girl scene later on, because, you know, a lot of the bands I've been in have also been punk bands and grunge and stuff like this. And I don't know, like, it's great that every genre has its women at the front, and every era has a different kind of every era in time has different women doing the best in their genre, I think. So yeah, I guess like Heart, I've always been a really big fan of Heart as well. Like, I love those two. And I think they have such a cool story as well. Like, being sisters, it's so so unique and interesting hearing their perspective on, like, how they were treated by the industry in the very early days. And it was very, I don't know, yeah, they were just very, like, crude about them. And they put up with a lot, really.
Yeah, side note with Heart, I was a major groupie for Heart. I would travel everywhere. I was like like the Deadheads or like the Grateful Dead people that follow. I was like that with Heart. I followed them everywhere. I've been to so many concerts of them, and I had never met them. And then, you know, years later when I came to LA to get a record deal, it was Howard Kaufman that managed me. And Howard Kaufman also managed Heart at that time. That was the 80s, you know, with the big boobs and the bras and all the stuff and the big hair at that era. And, you know, to think that I had been such a fan and following them and then to be managed by Howard Kaufman was a huge deal for me. Like, that was a really big, amazing, like, wow moment. But yeah, Heart, amazing. All the Runaways, amazing. You know, it's funny that you were talking about the 70s and your the earlier days of rock and roll. I remember I had my uncle married a Japanese woman and lived in Japan for many years. And his daughter Francis and Susie, when they came to the United States, came to my parents' house with Beatles albums and all sorts of vinyl. And I have this distinct memory, and I was just a little girl, but my sisters were more teenagers. And these girls were, Susie and Francis were more 17, 18. And they were gorgeous, straight hair, Japanese girls, parted in the middle. One of them bleached their hair blonde. The other one had black. And they taught us how to rock and roll dance to the Beatles. And I can see us all in the living room of my parents' house with these vinyl records, with these cool chicks from Japan that I was related to. And, gosh, what a great memory. I'm so happy that you were talking, Walt, about a little bit of history with you and your personal story, because that clicked a memory for me. And that was a great afternoon. It was a Sunday afternoon, and I'll never forget it. So thanks for jarring my memory.
No problem. I will say, on a personal note, I was traveling for my job. I work for a company in Belgium. And only a little less than a month ago, I was over there, and Girl School and Alcatraz were playing in Belgium. So, of course, I took a ride to see the show because, you know, who doesn't want to see a show, a metal show in another country? But we had Kim McAuliffe on our show to help them promote their really, really kick-ass new album, What the 45. So if you guys haven't heard it, check it out. It's really, really good. But she's the nicest lady. Got to meet her, take a couple pictures, say hi. And they were awesome. I mean, just four ladies up there, you know, getting out there at 11 o'clock at night on a Wednesday. Not easy to do, you know, cold and dark and a smoky little bar, but great, great, great band.
I saw that they toured, you know, they also came through the UK, and like, I was just stunned by how relentless their schedule was. And, you know, I think they maybe on some of them, they did two nights in a row because it was a very small venue. And so they played twice because like the tickets were so popular. And I was just like, how are these guys still got the energy to play these like tiny venues? Because like they're a massive band, but they're still wanting to support the independent and the grassroots venues over here, which I think is really, really what we need. Like, you know, bands are on their way up. They need those small venues to stay going. And it's great that they're visiting them to kind of keep them alive while they've, you know, they could be playing so much bigger places. But it looked like a really stacked lineup that was, very tempting. But I think the day they came to Birmingham, I had a teaching day. So I was working until quite late. So I didn't make it down, unfortunately.
Well, I will tell you, they drove from Southampton, UK, all the way to outside of Ghent, Belgium. And she said it was like an 8.5 hour drive on, you know, driving their van with their equipment after playing a show the night before. So, you know, give them credit all in the world. So,
yeah, that's impressive. I've done that a few times and like, it's not easy. It's not good.
So let's talk about some of the artists, female artists. So Doro Pesch and Lee Aaron, to me, these are the metal queens. One calls herself the metal queen and the other one put out an album called Metal Queen. You know, they're both still active in 2024. You know, you hear a lot about Doro Pesch, not so much about Lee Aaron, but she's still out there. Both kick-ass metal musicians. Becky, I'm sure you're influenced by Doro or maybe Lee Aaron. Talk about those, what they mean to you.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I only know a couple of songs by Lee Aaron, but like, I don't know, it's just like embedded in my psyche, like those songs and that, like those music videos, and just her whole just vibe is awesome. She's actually playing this festival in Switzerland later this year that my band are also playing. When she got announced for that festival, I was like, yes, we're going to see Lee Aaron. That's fantastic. So yeah, really looking forward to that. And yeah, Doro, like first seeing her, her stuff with Warlock back when, I don't know, yeah, I was a teenager and I'd kind of stay up late and because the kind of more commercial and like modern stuff would be played during the day. But if I stayed up late and watched the music channels, they put on like kind of like 80s classics and then they'd just get like deeper and deeper into like, I don't know, certain like genres the later you got on. But yeah, I love the Warlock stuff. And I think she's just such a cool woman. Like I've watched so many interviews of her talking about I don't know, her perspective on metal and be as a woman in the industry and various different things. And she just seems like a really genuine and honest and just like lovely person who's just super passionate about heavy metal and has, I don't know, just she's just iconic. She's never like changed. She looks like exactly the same as she did in the 90s. And it's, yeah, she's just a timeless classic. I love her.
Yeah, I agree with that. Joro's flipping amazing. I'm not really that familiar with Lee Erin at all. I know the name, obviously. I know what she looks like, but I've never really done a deep dive on her music. Doro with Warlock, yeah, I did. And I've always loved her. And she's such a sweetheart. And she's just so down to earth and genuine and real and just happy. You know, she just embraces everyone. I love her whole vibe. And I love when we're on the cruises together and we get to hang out and chat. And I saw her when she came to the Whiskey a Go-Go, and I made sure to go backstage and say hello. And she's just always so gracious and so kind and always remembers your name. And I love her. I can't say any more great things about her, because everything that whenever you talk about Doro is just greatness and gracious and down to earth and authentic and real and gorgeous and fucking badass on stage. Like, she's just amazing. Relentless energy. You know, the songs are great. They're so anthemic, fists in the air stuff. And yeah, she's one of a kind. I love her.
Definitely. Becky, when you mentioned your band, you're referencing Fury, correct?
Yeah.
So maybe for the American audience that is not familiar with Fury, just give us a little background on Fury and what you got going on this year.
So the background is, I think the band's been going since, like, I don't even know, 2008 or something, but I wasn't in the band for the first couple of albums. I joined in the end of 2017 after depping for them for a tour, and then we released the last two albums, The Grand Prize, in 2020. That was interesting. That was an interesting album release. We had to cancel our whole tour and just try and do everything online. And then the next album was Born to Sin. We released that in 2022. So that's the latest one. And we mostly gig in the UK. We've had a few stints out in Europe, gigging various like festivals and small venues there. But, you know, we're completely independent. All of the merch, like all the CDs and vinyls and T-shirts are like in the room next to me, and I send everything out from my house. So yes, it's it's very time consuming. It's still being this DIY. I'm still like, I'm the booking agent, and I kind of make everything happen at the moment. But you know, we're hoping that for the next album cycle, we may, you know, have some kind of opportunity to work with people in the industry that can kind of help us with these kinds of things, because it's really hard to distribute your own stuff and, you know, book gigs internationally when you're just in some island in the middle of the like North Sea. But we're a heavy metal band. Well, kind of like it used to be more like power metal, thrash metal. It's become a little bit more kind of heavy metal, hard rock more recently. When I joined, we were a 4-piece. More recently, we've become a 5-piece because we now have both male and female lead vocalists.
Yes.
So it was very natural progression through the last couple of albums. We had more and more backing vocals that were like female backing vocals. And it was something that I couldn't pull off live. Like, I'm not very good at playing bass and singing at the same time. And I'm not a very good singer. So for the live shows, when we came back after lockdown, we were like, well, let's see who's free to maybe get up and sing some backing vocals with us. And so we got this singer Naya Eiffel to play those shows, and as the albums progressed, she did more and more backing vocals, did more and more live vocals, and then we were like, well, you're basically in the band now, we might as well make ourselves a 5-piece. So now the next album is like, okay, we actually have two lead vocalists and we have to divide the songs up between them, you know, figure out what's the best key for who, and you know, what is the best, what song feels more like it should have male vocals and which should have female vocals, or, you know, some of them are mixed, you know, with thinking very, I don't know, Meatloaf and Cher, like doing Ted Trigger for Love or something. We like that. I don't know. We like that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think it's not really done enough in, currently. I think it's a dynamic that really works. So, if anyone's interested in checking out Fury, our latest album is called Born to Sin. And we're working on new music, which hopefully we'll have some new music out this year. Probably the album, maybe the end of this year, maybe next year. But stuff is in the works. We started recording already.
We'll make sure to list the socials out for Fury as well. We'll talk about the other band in a little while. But let's get back to the history of women. The sweet spot of the late 80s. Lorraine, you lived it. You were there. As a kid watching it on MTV, you know, to me, there were only four bands. And you tell me, maybe I'm missing something. But of course, there was Vixen and Lita Ford. And then you had Princess Pang. And you had Soraya and Femme Fatale. So there's five. But again, they were still out there on MTV. There were probably others, but those are the five that I remember being played at, 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night as I'm glued to my TV in my house. So talk a little bit about that period for you.
Yeah, really interesting time for sure. I mean, it was the fastest way to get MTV in the house for us was for me to be on MTV. So my parents signed up for MTV and had it, which it made me so proud that they did that. Princess Pang was so cool. I don't remember the singer's name, but I just remember she looked so cool. She wasn't really metal or rock. Like, she was just more, it wasn't metal. It was more, really, Vixen really wasn't metal.
Yeah.
And Femme Fatale wasn't metal. And Soraya wasn't metal. We were rock and roll. But I think that they categorized us by the outfits we wore. If we had leather jackets with studs on them, that labeled us as metal, but we weren't really metal at all. Princess Pang was cool. She wore that really cool funky hat. Soraya was great. She had a great voice. Cycle Sluts from Hell, I thought, were amazing.
Yes.
Smash Gladys is another band that was coming up. They might not have been as mainstream or as popular as what Vixen and I and Lita Ford and those were really, for me and my circle, it was Vixen, Lita Ford, me, Femme Fatale and Dora were kind of in the same block together. But I love all those bands and I love all those videos, and watching them, I always thought it was so cool to see all these females doing what they loved the best. I was always really intrigued by Vixen because it was all female. And since I was the front person in an all male band, I always thought it would be so cool. Like, what would it be like? It probably would be like a slumber party or something, I thought. Amazing to think now, 35 years later, that I'm experiencing that. I mean, I got to say to Becky, I mean, you're coming up and you love what you do. And, sitting where I sit now, and just to everybody that listens, you never know what is around the corner. You never know what is next. You never in a million years would I have thought that in 2020, whatever it was, that I was going to become the lead singer of Vixen, that I would be even asked to be the lead singer of Vixen. In the 80s, I never would have thought it, right? And it wasn't that I was competing or they were competing with me or them or anything, but it just wasn't a thing that was happening back then. It's like you had your band, you lived, breathed, and slept it, and you died it, and that's it. Now, that was your claim to fame or whatever. And so to be doing this is just, life is so interesting, and I always love to get the message out that whatever people are going through, up or down, good or bad, like, you never know what's around the corner. You never know what that next phone call brings. And just live life to the fullest and be happy every day and grateful, because you do get opportunities that come from nowhere all the time. And life is pretty cool. It's a wild ride. Those were great bands, great videos. I can't really think of any other females at the time. Obviously, Girls School was doing well over in England, and then coming to the U.S. Obviously, the Runaways were a staple. But I can't really think of any more rock bands or females during that time in the late 80s. So those were, that was the main stuff that was going on.
Lorraine, a question for you, though, about that era. And you touched on it a little earlier, but again, a little bit more on it. Like, how was it trying to cement your identity as a female front person in a male-dominated scene back then? I mean, it couldn't have been easy. It's not like it is today.
No, it wasn't easy, but I don't know that. I know for me, I didn't think about it. I didn't think I'm trying to be prominent in this male-dominated rock world. I just was me. And I fronted a rockin' group of guys, and we were rock and rolling in your face. And it wasn't plotted, it wasn't planned, it wasn't anything other than it was who I was and how I wanted to present myself. I mean, the 80s were fun. The 80s were mayhem. The 80s were happy times. The 80s were sex, drugs, rock and roll. And for me, as a girl in a rock band, I mean, yeah, it was sex. It was sexy. I mean, the whole Femme Fatale album is really focused on sex. Waiting for the Big One was the first single. My Baby's Gun. I mean, there was just a sexual tone in everything. And I think that that's indicative for the time and also, you know, me having a blast, you know, rocking and rolling, short shorts. It's how I dressed. I mean, cowboy boots and short shorts and bustiers. I mean, Doro Pesch was wearing bustiers. I mean, it was the time. We were all just young women rocking and rolling, having a blast, sex, drugs, rock and roll. That's all I can say. You know, I mean, that's for reals. And so, yeah, I didn't manufacture this thing. The label didn't come to me and say, oh, we're going to make you this pinup sexy person, whatever. I mean, they just took what I gave them. And that was big hair, boobs that Howard Kaufman bought me, by the way. I've admitted that in many interviews. You know, when I first met Howard Kaufman, we had an amazing meeting. I remember Andrea Accardo said, you know, don't be offended if Howard meets with you for 5 minutes. He's a very, very busy man. And I went in, I was there for about an hour, hour and a half. I sat on his desk. We just got along great. And then when I left the meeting, he told her, he's like, I want a manager. I love her. She's amazing. Da, da, da. And so then she also said, he has a question for you. And I said, what is that? And she said, if he buys you boobs, will you wear them? And I said, yes, I will. So that was like, that is so indicative of the time. The 80s were about that. And I said yes, and it was a great thing. And I mean, I've enjoyed every moment of it. And people can look at the 80s and say, oh, they were excessive, they were over the top. You know, Lorraine was this, Lorraine was that. She was so da-da. But you know what? So be it. Yes, I was. I still am. I love it. I love being on stage. I love rock and roll. It is in me. It's in my DNA. My grandmother was a singer. My dad sang in church. I mean, singing and music is in me. And it's what I do. And I might take different shapes and forms. And, you know, I have a solo project. It's very different from Vixen. It's very different from Femme Fatale. I sing a little bit different than I did in Femme Fatale. I mean, that was, you know, a young voice in her 20s just going crazy on stage. And I love the guttural tone that I used to have, and I still have that. But I also can sing in different ways and different types of music. I mean, I'm a million different people. I think we all are. You know, I just happen to admit it. There's a million different people and personalities in here. But yeah, the 80s were amazing, and I wouldn't change a thing.
Well, appreciate you sharing that. Becky, you grew up in the 90s, you mentioned, but I think this is where women in hard rock and metal, it exploded in the 90s. And I remember very well, like when Sirius XM and satellite radio came out. And some of the bands that come to mind that hit the scene then were, you mentioned it earlier, Arch Enemy. Arch Enemy is like, you know, we started with Angela, now Alicia's singing and fronting the band. But you had Kitty, the Lander sisters, who they hit the ground and now they're back. They put a new single out. The single's all over the place on XM radio. It's everything you expect from them. Fast, heavy, you know, melodic vocals, then death vocals. But then there's Evanescence. One of my favorites that came out of that period was Lacuna Coil, the Italian band. Christina, five range vocalists, amazing female, male fronted band. But that was the beginning of the explosion to me. And you could go on and on and on, and we'll touch on some of those genres. But Becky, talk about some of those bands. Are you fans of any of them?
The Cuda Coil, I've always been really into. Like, I've seen them live a couple of times. Nightwish were a really big one for me. I saw them, I think they were the first like metal band I saw live, and it was just an experience, and I still just love them so much. Through all of their eras, they've been brilliant. Arch Enemy, I think, like, my mind was blown when I first listening to Arch Enemy and then watching the music video, and I'm like, that's a woman singing that, like, she's like growling. I don't even know how this is possible. And like, I hadn't really listened to those kind of extreme like guttural growling vocals before, like a man doing it either. But I kind of just stopped on this music video. What one was it? I think it was We Will Rise. And I was just like, just stunned and like suddenly really interested in kind of like melodic death metal because she was doing it. And I just thought she was super cool. And the other bands like Kitty, yes. Like, I think it seemed like in this era, I guess moving into the 90s, like female fronted or all female bands were the genres were just spreading out. You know, if you kind of compare to before then, it's mostly in the hard rock vein. Now it's kind of branching out so much more into like goth, death metal, more, I don't know, I guess like new metal with Kitty. And it was a really exciting time, I guess, like to be a woman who's like discovering metal, because you can suddenly see that it's everywhere and there's so many different ways of dressing up. Whereas I think maybe in the 80s, I mean, everyone was dressing like that. The guys were dressing like the same as the women. Everything was just like sex appeal, big hair, and like, I also love that. But by the time it comes to the 90s, like, women were kind of had very unique styles. There would be like, you know, a Nightwish, like Tarja, like with a floor length like ball gown, and then next you see Arch Enemy singer, just this like ripped t-shirt and like some jeans or whatever, and then, you know, all the kind of like grunge bands as well that were, I don't know, just like making their own thing, and all the punk bands as well. So yeah, I guess maybe it was because, you know, the internet and the different music channels were there, and they could cater to women doing lots of different things. Whereas maybe, like Lorraine said before, like if they already played Vixen, they're not going to play Doro, or, you know, well, okay, we already have our quota ticked for a woman for a woman on our station. So when there became more stations, they could play more of them, and it kind of had a snowballing effect where it could spread out in genres a lot wider, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. And look what it did. You mentioned some of what I call the symphonic metal bands, but like, look at it today. There's such an explosion of female-fronted, you know, Nightwish, Amarante, Epica, Within Temptation. I mean, Within Temptation got the opening slot on the last Iron Maiden tour. You know, to see them in an arena, a hockey arena in the States, was amazing. But just, again, majestic, beautiful, operatic, you know, I mean, call it what you want. The big, beautiful hair. They look like they're going out to like a wedding or a dance. A very distinct style. I could appreciate that. A whole different style of metal. And then, like you said, then you have the Arch Enemies, or a band like I like, the Butcher Babies, right? I mean, another one with the death growl. Or, for example, Burning Witches, who's circling the States now, opening up for KK's Priest and LA Guns. You know, they're playing down here in New Jersey on Friday. Can't wait to see them. An all-girl band from Switzerland. So, or how about Maria Brink from In This Moment? Like, she's more like an actress, like almost looks like she's in a musical up there with all kinds of crazy gowns and fans blowing on her and blood coming from all different directions. Like, so many cool things going on these days.
Yeah, I think the possibilities have kind of opened up. And I guess maybe it's the, the magazines, the TV channels, the radio stations, and management, just being a bit more open-minded to what people can do and what women can do. And because there have been, you know, so many pioneers kind of pushing that for the last few decades, we've kind of finally got to a point where, you know, we can have a few in like different genres, and that we can show the variety and like the huge scope that, that women can achieve in music.
Yeah. And there's, and to me, there's like, there's even more subgenres. Like I think of like one of my favorite bands now, I love it, and I call it like modern rock, is Hailstorm, right? You know, Lizzie Hale, they're from Pennsylvania, not far from where I live. And when they were early on in their career, probably, late 2008 or so, they came out, and I went and checked them out. And the second I saw them, I said, these guys are going to be huge, because it was not what they put on an album, because the album was okay. But, you know, I said, I just want to check them out. But it's what they brought, her and her brother RJ brought live. I said, they have everything in the making to be an arena size act. And they are, they've become that today. A band like The Pretty Reckless, you know, going back to Lizzie Hale. I mean, her influences are in the metal world. I mean, they've done cover songs live. They played Dio. They played Judas Priest. You know, they've done Whitesnake songs. Like, you know, they wear their heart in their sleeve with their influences. But again, a band like Pretty Reckless, or some of the new ones that I like, they're, let's say, the younger bands. There's two bands that I think are really cool. One is called Plush. It's an all-female band out of the U.S. They're young girls, 18, 19. And then there's the sisters out of Mexico called The Warning. They're a trio. Again, they're a little, they are modern rock. They're not metal, but very, very cool. And, you know, if you haven't heard them, check them both out. But really, really good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen their stuff pop up online all over the place. Yeah. I think they've got some really good, you know, things in place to push them to the next level.
Now, Lorraine, for you, I mean, being from Southern California, I think of that area and I think of two guitar shredders, Nita Strauss and Orianthe. Both played with Alice Cooper, both kick ass, both are just shredders all the way. Do you know them? Have you, you know, rubbed elbows with them? What's your impressions on Nita? Hurricane Nita.
Hurricane Nita. Nita was in Femme Fatale. So Nita was my guitar player when I did the Monsters of Rock cruise. Larry Morand called and wanted Femme Fatale on the boat. And obviously I didn't have Femme Fatale in place back then. This is back in 2013. And so I had to put a band together. Bill D'Angelo, who was the original guitar player for Femme Fatale, had passed away 8 years ago. And I just wanted something fresh. So I actually called Courtney Cox, who is now in Burning Witches, and I called Nita. I got their numbers from a friend of mine, guitar player, and I left messages and I said, you know, I'm putting Femme Fatale together. I'm going to do an all-female version, and I'd love to meet you. I left the same message for each of them, and I didn't know that they lived together. So Nita and Courtney both got the same message, and they both called me, and apparently, as the story goes, when I met them, they told me that they had been listening to Sirius Satellite Radio, Hair Nation, one afternoon when they were driving around and waiting for the big one came on. And Nita said, this is the kind of singer we need to sing with or play with. We need to put a band together like this kind of sound, da da da. And it was a couple days later that I called them and wanted them to be in my band. And so, yeah, Nita was my guitar player with Courtney for the Monsters of Rock cruise. We were together. Nita was in Femme Fatale for, 3 years. And then it was when Alice Cooper saw her. And I think that Kip Winger kind of made the introduction. And then she went to play with Alice. And then Nikki Stringfield, that was in the Iron Maidens and still is, became Nita's replacement. So, yeah, Nita is a shredder. She's amazing. Nonstop. She's so driven. I'm so proud of her. I love her so much. She always messages me on my birthday, and she's just very, very cool. She's very down to earth. She's beautiful. She's an amazing guitar player. It seems like everything she touches turns to gold. I mean, it's amazing to me that now she's played with Demi Lovato, Alice Cooper. She does with the Rams, you know, she performs at the games. I mean, she's hungry. She's driven. There's no stopping that woman. She's amazing. And then Orianthe, we just did a show with her a couple months ago. Amazing guitar player, beautifully skilled. I love her songs. I had no idea how great her songs were. And her voice is really great. I think that I've always just gotten caught up in the fact that she's an amazing blues guitar player, but she's a great songwriter and her music is really, really good. So I think everybody should take a second look and check out her solo stuff because she's really talented. I love both of them. I don't know Orianthe well. I've met her a couple times. We don't know each other like Nita and I know each other, but yeah, I respect both of them quite a bit. Amazing badasses.
Yeah, that's we had Orianthe on our show, about 2 years ago. And you're right, her pedigree, just think of her pedigree, right? She's played and performed with Carlos Santana, calls Carlos her uncle, and, you know, performed with Michael Jackson, performed with all these other people at a very, very young age, right? So pretty impressive. But Becky, we want to give you fair time because Lorraine hit on it best before is, you know, stay with your career, stay with your dreams, because you never know what's around the corner. Well, you hit your first big corner a couple of years ago. Like, God, man, like, you're the basis of Merciful Fate. How fucking cool is that? Like, you know, for me, it's fucking cool. Like, so I can't even imagine what you're feeling like. But maybe take us through how you landed that gig and how those tours are and then what's going forward. New material, more touring. What's going on the Merciful Fate camp?
Okay. I'll take you through the whole process of when I joined. So back in 2022, Merciful Fate were doing their first show in the UK for about 25 years. And so I've never seen them before because they've never come through. And this is like their first tour back everywhere for a long time. So they're playing at this festival called Bloodstock that I always go to. But I didn't have a ticket that year. But then I was like, come on. Merciful Fate playing this week. You've loved this band since you were like 14. Let's just go and it'll be fun. So I went to the festival. I was just hanging out with friends, camping there. And I found myself kind of like wandering around one of the bars. And then someone comes up to me and they say, Becky, someone needs to meet you. Come and meet Livia. And I'm like, who's Livia? I don't know what's going on. And then I kind of follow them. And I realize I'm going backstage of the main stage. And I'm like, well, hello, what's going on here? And I start to realize that I'm going to meet Merciful Fate. And then I'm just like, I don't know, I'm kind of losing it. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, like, I've drank so many, like, beers already today. Like, this is if I'd known, I wouldn't have drank so much. and then they kind of bring me over to Merciful Fate. And then they say, oh, do you know why you're here? Do you know why you're here to meet us? And I'm like, no. And then they're like, yeah, we need someone to come on tour with us. We have this tour in America in a couple of months. And I'm like, okay, and? and we need a bass player. And we thought, like, maybe you'd be free. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, like, definitely. I don't need to look at my calendar. I'll be there, yes, of course. And I just, you know, I didn't expect to, you know, meet anyone of that caliber that weekend. I was just very excited to see them play and be in the audience, just enjoying the moment, like the first time that they've been in the UK for 25 years. But then, yeah, they offered me a job. And by the time I got back to my campsite, my friends were like, where the hell have you been? Like, we lost you and like we didn't hear from you. But the thing is, my phone ran out of battery. I was gonna, like, my plan was to go back to the campsite, get the portable charger, you know, get changed, ready to go back into the arena for Merciful Fate's set because they were headlining. But yeah, like by the time I got into the backstage chatting, you know, and just like, I couldn't leave, you know, I couldn't leave. So I watched their set from like side of stage, which was very exciting. And then, but I don't know, it took a long time for it to sink in. But I started learning the songs. And then by, I think it was October, I think we went out to start the American tour. And then, yeah. 16 or so dates with them. Then we did two shows in Mexico after that. And And then that was it. And I thought, okay. So the thing was, their bass player was double booked because he has another band called Armored Saint. And Armored Saint had this big tour that he had to be on. So I was just stepping in for those like 2 months where they needed me. But then for coming into this year, they needed me again to step in next month, which is going to be Brazil and Chile. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. Yeah, I'll be back. Like, that's so exciting because, you know, when I said goodbye to them, you know, in like December 2022, I was like, oh, I don't know if I'll ever see you guys again. I mean, when you're just a dep, like you're just filling in, you still make all those friendships that like feel very close because you've been on the road together for like, you know, 6 weeks or so. And then you're like, that's it. That's the end. But, you know, I was very pleased to know that they wanted me back and there was another opportunity to play with them. But by this point, they were starting to think about the new album. So there is new music in the works. And who were they going to use to play bass? Because that's then kind of like three trips, like the USA trip, the Mexico trip, and then this other South America trip that their bass player couldn't make. And so maybe it'd be a smart decision now to be like, oh, we're going to have a new album with a new bass player. And yeah, like, and the new bass player will play all of the live shows. We don't have to, you know, have to worry about getting depths in anymore. And then they were like, oh, who should we get? And I don't know, overwhelmingly, everyone in the band kind of wanted me to come back. So that was just fantastic. And it made me feel so good to know that I did a good job when I was just there to be a guest because, you know, it was the biggest opportunity of my life so far. So the pressure that I put myself under was very big to like not mess this up. But yeah, it turns out it went okay. And so now I have the job permanently. So I've started working on some of the demos and hopefully this year we'll have at least a new single or two maybe. And then probably next year, towards the end of next year, there may be a new album that I'll have recorded on. Yeah, yeah. It was, you know, it was really good timing because it was just after Fury had released our latest album. And I was like, you know, it was another like DIY release. And, you know, we pushed it as hard as we can. We did loads of music videos. We tried to get it out to any press that we could, but it just wasn't really taking off. Like the shows in the UK have been great. We had a bunch of festivals, but we couldn't really get into any new markets like Europe. And we were like, ah, why is nobody like paying attention to us? And like, I was thinking like, why is every other band seem to be doing well? And I'm just like stuck here. And then literally the next day I got this offer. So yeah, you're right. Like you never know when something's just around the corner, but you know, I didn't know these guys, at all or know anyone involved in Merciful Fate, but they came across my videos on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and that's the thing, you know, when you put things online, you never know who's watching them. Like loads of people can watch them and they could just be anyone, like famous people. People who have opportunities for you in the future. So, you know, I think it's really important to like put value in these things and know that they are important. And you know, when you feel like, why am I doing this stuff, why am I wasting time with like covers or, you know, social media, like if you think that maybe social media is kind of overrated, yes, you may be right in some ways, but like it put me in front of the people that needed to see me to make this thing happen. So it's a really cool thing that it all happened that way, because I would have never met them otherwise.
Yeah, it's using the latest technology and the latest social media. You know, you coming from another generation, it's different than Lorraine and I, right? So you're using the tools that maybe, you know, young kids. I have a 9-year-old daughter, right? This is the stuff she uses. She's on TikTok all day long. She doesn't know how to go pick up a CD and put it in the car, right? So it's just how it is.
Yeah, it's amazing, all the social media, and it really does pay off. You know, during the week, I have a jobby job and I work in television, and there is a woman, the godfather of diamonds in New York, and that has a TikTok that blew up, And we went after her and her people in the New York district, and we're actually doing a reality show about them now. My company is, and it was because of TikTok. I have an amazing thing that's happening with me that I can't tell you, but I can't reveal it yet. But I'm having another meeting about it today in about an hour. But some really amazing thing is happening for me that I'm going to be doing a duet with someone. Should I say a duet? I guess I should just say I'm going to be doing something with someone. And it is because of social media and them and their camp reaching out to me through Instagram. So I'm really excited about the future and this amazing opportunity. And yeah, social media, it's a pain in the ass. It's weird. It's kind of like, it's so like self-indulgent. It can be a really cool thing. And I'm so happy and proud of you, Becky, for that's just the coolest story ever. I love that so much. Congrats. That's super cool.
Well, Lorraine, you when the news becomes public about your secret announcement, you know, tell Metal Man RC, we'll bring you back on the show. But ladies, this has been fantastic. I've really enjoyed this this three-way conversation. Were there any bands I'm missing? There's probably lots out there, but are there any others you're thinking about that you just want to say, you forgot about so-and-so?
I love that you mentioned the Butcher Babies for sure and the Burning Witches. I was happy that you mentioned that, but I really can't think of anybody. Okay. You got somebody, Becky?
I'm trying to think as well. God.
What about Alicia Vigil that plays bass for Dragons?
Dragon Force.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, she's great. Yeah, she's great. You know, maybe we've overlooked some of the, players, for metal bands that when they're not like fronting the band or it's not like a all male band. Like, I think, you know, like what Nita Strauss is doing, I think it's great that like a woman has joined a band that like, I don't know, like, to me, a lot of like older bands where they've typically been an all male lineup, to have that change and to be like brave enough to do it, and like you're gonna piss off some fans because some people just don't like change, you know, stuff like that. Same with Alicia with Dragon Force. I think it's, you know, really brave and it's really great to see that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's very cool when bands, when predominantly male bands that have that they have such a heavy male audience and they take the chance and they take the risk. And I think that they're smart to do that because, you know, women do run the world. And I just think it's great for a man to be so brave to recognize and see the talent and take the chance and take the risk of pissing off fans. But in the end, women almost always win everybody over when they get into these positions. I mean, if they're kick ass, there's no reason why they wouldn't. So I love when men do that. It's a very, it's very brave. It's very risky. I just love it. I respect them so much for doing so. So,
and that's the thing, like the women normally shine so much in those situations. The person that was usually like in the forefront, now everyone's like, wow, look at the guitars, look at Nita Strauss. They're like, the band is called Alice Cooper, guys, come on, it's about me. But like, I was like, but Nita Strauss though, we think she's so cool. And you know, I guess they kind of run that risk of like, oh, they're gonna have their own little group of fans that just want to like But you know, then you need to be there for everyone, and like for a lot of women looking up to them and seeing, great that there's women doing this now. Like, it makes a huge difference. So yeah, like I think it's great when men are willing to let a girl come in, because you never know what's going to happen.
Well, Becky, I was at the Merciful Fate Queen show in November of 2022. Number one, that show was unbelievable. One of the best shows I've ever seen. The whole vibe of the whole day was just unreal. But, you know, that was a big facility and it was loud. One of the loudest shows I ever heard. And But all eyes were on you. I'm not going to lie. It was like, look at this band. But you know what? There's a female bass player, but you know, she's not up there strutting her stuff. She's up there with a Rickenbacker, cut off Iron Maiden t-shirt or whatever you had on, holding that bass up. Like, it was just totally kicked ass. So,
love it.
Yeah. That's the thing. As a bass player, you know, you're not supposed to be in the limelight. I was kind of like, I'm the dep and I'm the bass player. I better, like, you know, stay back here. But then people in the front row were just like, Becky, Becky. I was like, they know my name already. Like, this is cool. I've never played America before, but like, hey, guys. it was really cool. That was a really very special tour.
A quick shout out to Graham Bonnet's wife, Bethany Heavenstone. Oh, yeah. She's another bass player. We've had Graham and Bethany on the show. It's been a couple of years, but big shout out to her. She's amazing too. And, you know, Graham's sidekick. But ladies, this has been awesome. Just a chance to get your socials. Where can we find all about Vixen, Fury, Merciful Fate, Lorraine Lewis? Give us your socials. Lorraine, you first.
Okay. Vixen Band is Vixen, V-I-X-E-N underscore B-A-N-D. Stay away from Vixen Official because that's porn. But it is Vixen underscore B-A-N-D. I have to correct people all the time. My personal account is Lorraine Lewis Rocks. Lorraine with two R's. Remember, I'm old school. Lorraine Lewis Rocks is Instagram. And then was there another one for Vixen? No. Is that it? I mean, follow Grit Lightning, Julia Lage, Roxy Petrucci, all of us girls. We love it. I answer everybody pretty much within 24 to 48 hours. I comment all the time. It's my thing. I like to be belly to belly with the people. And then the website for shows, Vixen, that is vixenofficial.com. And then LorraineLewisRocks.co is my personal website. And there you have it.
Thanks. Go ahead, Becky, your socials.
So to find me, my website is BeckyBaldwinBass.com, and you can find my Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Patreon. I also have a Patreon. That's also Becky Baldwin Bass. For Fury, if you like, search Spotify for Fury, and if you search our album, there's loads of bands called Fury. So search for Born to Sin, and that's our latest album. Then you'll find the band from there. Our website is furyofficial.co.uk. And again, Facebook's a bit harder, but I'm sure you'll find some links from those two to find out which Fury it is. We picked the most generic name and it's really backfired. But yes, if you go to BeckyBaldwinBass.com, everything is on there.
Super. Well, ladies, thank you so much. Just a reminder, get up to our website, MetalMayhemROC.com, and join our community by signing up for our email newsletter. This is the best way to stay updated on new product episodes, interviews on our YouTube channel, CD and concert reviews, as well as reminders to join us on our live radio show Monday nights on Metal Devastation Radio. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. For my guests, Lorraine Lewis of Vixen, Becky Baldwin of Merciful Fate and Fury, this is Metal Wall from Metal Mayhem ROC.
Woo!
Metal for life.
Thank you for listening to Metal Mayhem ROC. Check out our website at metalmayhemroc.com for information on podcasts, archives, links to all our live radio shows, and all sorts of info. Please like, follow, and share with everyone, even your non-metal friends. And always remember to keep it heavy.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.